Church Podcast, the place for conversations with church leaders about social media. This is episode number 45, and my name is DJ Chuang, your weekly host for this podcast. And if you listen to episode 44 with John Dyer, you heard a great presentation with some very thoughtful questions about new issues that technology raises for us, how the use of social media is like speaking a different language, the thinking patterns that technology, like social media, engenders in us. And now we have so many channels to communicate with. We have to be discerning about which is the right channel or the right medium in order to communicate different kinds of messages. And it opens the question of how we transfer knowledge and educate people, as well as what does image magnification and the amplification of content due to our self-perception, and even raises questions of the spirituality of technology. And on this episode, I'm actually joined with John Dyer, having a conversation with him about his book, From the Garden to the City, about his thoughtful reflections regarding technology and theology and social media. And towards the end of our conversation, we actually get him to weigh in about Google Glass and some of the possible implications of how that technology might help us to think morally. John Dyer is the Executive Director of Communication and Educational Technology at Dallas Theological Seminary. And here's my conversation with John Dyer.
Well, I'm with John Dyer of Dallas Theological Seminary. Today, I wanted to chat with you about technology and theology and how that should inform and impact our use of social media as church leaders. So describe a bit of your background with technology and theology.
Yeah, so after college, I worked as a youth pastor for a couple of years and didn't make enough money, so I started working in web development and, you know, had a little firm and did freelance and just worked in that world. And then when I felt like God was calling me to go to seminary, I did seminary, and they kind of worked in separate fields. So I had my technology field, my theology field, and they really didn't ever touch, except for just saying, hey, I'm gonna use technology for God. But I never really thought about it at all. Just did both, and they both seemed to live in two separate worlds. And that was pretty much how it was for most of the way through seminary.
Yeah, but something changed because you began to bring that together, and one of those things that came out of it was your book, From the Garden to the
Sea. Yeah, I had somebody, you know, a professor at one point just say something like, one of the most dangerous or dumb things you can believe is that technology is neutral. And I thought, well, that's exactly what I believe, is that technology is neutral. We just need to use it for God and not for evil. And I really wanted to ask him about that, but he got sick and I couldn't talk to him anymore. So I had to read some books, and I seemed to find that there were those who were saying, you know, use technology all the time, every time, it's always good. And then there were these other guys who were saying technology is the destruction of the world and it's making our children bad. And there were these two very polar opposites. So what I really wanted to do is find some way to take some of the, you know, helpful critiques that are out there, but also all of the helpful, man, let's use this for the kingdom of God, and put those together in a way that maybe is going to be a little bit more complex and not, it can't be fit in one tweet, but it would be something that I think would be helpful to the church and to God's kingdom.
Well, you did something marvelous in your book. You took us all the way back to Genesis and you found the seedbeds of how technology came about. It's not just a 21st century invention that came with internet and social media.
Yeah.
So what did you find there to inform how technology has been a part of our lives throughout civilization?
Yeah, I mean, my thinking about this started by just thinking about the Bible itself and realizing these funny little things, like that, you know, there weren't any verse numbers until the 1600s. So nobody before that had favorite verses. And then thinking about when I had a projector with my youth group kids, how that projector seemed to change the way they interacted with the Bible. So that started making me kind of go back in time and thinking about, you know, just how we use the Bible. And you know, talking about that, ironically, talking about that at a little conference, somebody recorded that. Somebody put that on a blog, and a publisher called and said, make a book. And so the even just this, the genesis of this book was very much in the world of technology. But as I went further back, you know, I found a really funny definition of technology was that all of us tend to think of technology as things invented after we were born. So, you know, we don't think about airplanes or cars or even electricity as being technology, but that's all the stuff that someone you know, just 100, 150 years ago would have thought was magic or sorcery. So when we start going back and thinking, gosh, really anything that people make is in some way a tool or a technology. And once you open it up like that, you can see how just about all kinds of things that are around us, from chairs to windows to lights, all of those things kind of shape the way that we interact with the world and what we think is right and good. And once we have that perspective, we can see that the Bible really has a lot to say about that.
Yeah, so what does the Bible have to say about digital technologies? I think you've alluded to how technology is practically everything that's handmade that helps us do something.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean, so walk us through that.
There's always going to be these multiple facets. So on one hand, anything that anyone makes is going to be a reflection of the image of God. So whether that person is a Christian or non-Christian, God is, you know, the first verb in the Bible is in the beginning, God created. And when we create, we too reflect his image. That's beautiful. So whether it's a beautifully crafted, you know, piece of Apple technology or a disgusting Microsoft one or whatever it is, those are all things that in some way reflect something about God. On the other hand, I think, you know, we all know that we are these, you know, fallen creatures and that we tend to use things in selfish ways. And so technology is always going to open up some new avenue, some new way to help us sin. It doesn't make us sin, but it certainly makes certain kinds of sin more possible. And it helps us to focus sometimes on ourselves more than other people. So I think there's always going to be this battle back and forth of what it allows us to do, both for good and for evil, and the way that that's going to connect deep down into our soul, into who we are.
Yeah, so bring us into the 21st century. As you see the development of the internet, the development of social media, how all of us have a voice in the public square.
Yeah, yeah.
What are some of your theological reflections on that?
Yeah, I think it's fun. You know, when you take one step back before we go to social media and we say, take something like the phone or something like that, we say, okay, before there was a phone, what people used to do is they'd go over to someone's house and leave a little note that said, I'm going to call on you at 2:00. And then everybody would get dressed, they'd get ready so that when they actually met, they would be kind of ready for this conversation and be all dressed up and there'd be a lot of formality to it. But once we added the phone to that whole world, then to call on somebody, you know, you didn't have to get dressed up, you didn't have to have a time. And so the kinds of conversations that people had change, and the way that they go about those conversations change. And so I think when we move into social media, a similar thing is happening where the ways that people talk, what's expected of people, you know, let's take, you know, text messaging as an example. You know, when you know, kids go over to each other's houses, they can sort of text from outside and have somebody come out, and that's super convenient, but it sort of changes the interaction that someone might have with their family. So I think what's important to look at is go, okay, what did we do before and what do we do now? There's always going to be some kind of benefit and some kind of trade-off to that. So with digital technology, I think one of the just coolest things about it is that it allows us to connect throughout the week if we are fellow believers, that we can connect all the time. You know, you and I live nowhere near each other, but we're able to have this face-to-face conversation, and that allows all kinds of new connectivity. But that's always going to then change. You know, I had to close all the doors in my office, and I normally have an open door policy. I love to have people come in and talk and to be kind of the director there and be their friend, but I have to close them to talk with you. So there's always going to be some exchange there between what I gain by talking online and what I lose around me. And I think being just careful to think it through and not just immediately assume it is probably the most important part.
It's a difficult topic to have conversation around because we don't have the language and the categories for that because it's so new. Tech world in Silicon Valley, they're rolling out a new browser every 3 months.
Yeah, absolutely.
And our typical organizations as churches, we're doing annual planning and that kind of thing, and you just can't keep up. Yeah, I think what you pointed out as you looked at communication, the technology tools that we use for communication really shapes our conversation, our relationships, mm-hmm. and our culture.
Yeah.
And those are very much part of church.
And there's this little moment at the end of 2nd and 3rd John where John talks about where he's kind of making this decision, like, should I write? There's certain things he wants to talk to them about. And he's saying, you know, there's some things that I can write to you about and other things that I want to do with you face to face. And so writing was his technology of that day. And of course, if he hadn't done writing, we wouldn't have the Bible. The writing is absolutely essential to our mission as the church. If we didn't have that technology, we wouldn't have the Word of God. It's essential. And yet at the same time, he's saying, you know, there's other times where writing maybe isn't the best tool. I think you're starting to see businesses come up with kind of a hierarchy of which thing is Skype or is email or is face-to-face or is text, which one is going to be better. And the reason why they're making those decisions, it's about money. It's about knowing which one is the most efficient way to get money. And if they're doing that for money, I think that as the community of believers, that we also ought to be concerned with thinking through which tool is going to make the most sense to do which job and what's going to communicate. The trouble is that it's different, I think, generationally. So, you know, what means something to me might be, you know, a handwritten note, but a text might mean something more valuable to someone who's 12. So I think it's kind of like, you know, that book, The Five Love Languages, you know, a couple of years ago, you're supposed to figure out is it touch, yes, or information or gifts. I think now we need to think the same way about our media. We need to think about the 37 media languages and think, you know, it's not about what I want to receive. It's about what I can send to someone that will mean something to them. And so thinking about the other first is going to be really important in media, and not just complaining about what I want, but be thinking about the other person above myself.
Yeah, somewhat related to that, one of the things I've started doing in my contact list address book, I actually make a note of channel preferences. So yeah, when I want to communicate with my 16-year-old son, it's got to be a text message, whereas some other people, I got to use Facebook if I want a response within a day. And for some others, it's email. And for some others, it's phone. And then for some other, the only way I can really get a response from them is arrange a face-to-face meeting.
Yeah, that's an ebook right there. You're done. That's great. that's great. That's a great way to do it.
Well, you're active at an academic institution that's training church leaders.
Yeah.
So how are you incorporating social media into the life of education?
Yeah, I think in a number of ways. I mean, obviously there's the whole online education aspect. And I think what's so, to me, exciting about online education is that, you know, when we're talking about undergraduate education, usually people are doing an undergrad online degree because they want to change careers. So they're in one career they don't like, and they're changing careers to something else. With seminary online ed, one of the coolest things about that is that they're usually already in ministry in some way. So these are people who God's called, they have a community, they're deeply embedded, they're invested, they're discipling, and they just want additional training. So rather than leave and go spend 4 years in school, which might be the right thing for a lot of people, but some of these people, they want to stay where they are. And that allows them to both have sort of a embodied community around them, but also have a community of students that they can work with online. And so that's going to be everything from, you know, being able to do group assignments via Skype or Google Hangouts, to kind of looking at how they interact with social media. And I think the other thing is that a lot of assignments in the seminary now, there's still the kind of academic paper, right? An argument for the book of Hebrews and figure out what it's trying to say. But there's also ones where a professor might say, okay, someone's going to ask you this question about, say, you know, the ending of Mark. And what I want you to do is to be able to write an email-length report about how to answer this. So I think they're thinking through, like, how would you communicate these academic ideas in kind of a more regular, normal, spoken way, whether that be social media or Twitter or Facebook or email. I think the professors starting to move their assignments more that way. And then also we're seeing, you know, networks of people develop while they're in school and then also out of school as they, you know, move in and transition into ministry. They're able to find like-minded people. Since DTS has so many denominations, so many different people doing different things, they're able to, you know, connect with like-minded leaders, and that's a fun part of that.
That's great. So do you feel Dallas Seminary is doing well in terms of its online education and equipping leaders remotely as well as locally then?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, of our 2,000 students overall, about 800 of those are not in Dallas. So, you know, that's about 40% of them are in some kind of distance or online ed type environment. And that's really, really exciting to see that there's so many people who are able to stay with their ministry. So we, you know, we took the Jesus' statement of go and make disciples, and our kind of like slogan is stay and make disciples. So that, you know, you want to stay where you are and continue to get education. And that's a fun thing because we're able to hear from students. They're able to say, you know, I can take what I learned in the classroom online and immediately use that with somebody. And that's really fun to see. So that's going really well and always changing. For the last several years, I coded every single bit of it. That was kind of my role, was to make that. And now we're kind of making a transition into a new product. So that's a fun thing to be working on.
Can you give us a hint of which product you're looking at? Because there's so many out there.
Yeah, so there's a company called Instructure out of Salt Lake City, and they make a product called Canvas. And they really only formed in early 2011, so they're just about 2 years old. But they're, you know, if you look at Canvas versus Blackboard, Blackboard looks like something developed in the 80s that has continued to make little baby steps, and Canvas looks like something made in the 2010s. And it just kind of thinks and operates a little bit differently. And that's great, because we've never really wanted to buy a box product because it always seemed like it was behind. And Canvas is doing a really good job. So we're excited about that.
Great. Let's take a sidestep, because as I connect with innovative churches, they're seeing the potential and the leverage of online education and online training. Mm-hmm. So some of the innovative churches I connect with, that's their next question, is how can we effectively provide online training? And from your institutional perspective, you can give us some input to church leaders that are trying to figure out how do they deliver content, and how do they make sure the content is being processed in relationship and in community? What are some of the helpful principles that you're making sure your technology supports rather than the other way around?
Yeah, I think initially, you know, most people think of sort of a seminary classroom as a professor, you know, talking really importantly for an hour or two, and that's kind of what learning is. And so when we first started doing online education, we would just film the professor and put that up, and that was pretty much it. So it was kind of replicating the classroom. And there's nothing, you know, particularly bad about that. The problem, though, is that it doesn't really take advantage of online as online. It's just kind of a window in. And so you really need to kind of figure out, as I make the transition to kind of an online learning format, it's going to be different than a traditional classroom environment. And so, you know, you can look at some of those, there's all those great examples like Khan Academy is the one that we all kind of point to as saying, you know, they're thinking about how do people actually learn in a different way online or using a tool so that as soon as you learn something, even for 10 minutes, you might have a little follow-up quiz. It's not a quiz to give you a grade. It's something to help the learner know, did they actually learn something? Do they get it? And helps them go back and then directs them to something else they might want to learn. So I think thinking about it less as, here's all the data that I'm going to deliver over the course of several weeks, but thinking about how to take the learner on some kind of journey that may have a lot of starts and restarts and movements that go back and forth. But the online world lets you do that. And I think that's really the way to say, you've got to think differently. It can't just be, you know, a normal, say, 4-week class that you would have had at church. How do we do it 4 weeks online? You've got to kind of blow that totally up and think about it differently.
That's good. One of the beauties of online education, and I've taken a few courses online, is the rewind button.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't get that in real time.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about the unintended consequences of technology, right? And one of those is just that you'd say, gosh, I'm not able to be physically present with my classroom buddies or whatever. But one of the things we found that was fun was that we did transcripting for all the classes. So when someone's speaking, you've got the transcript there. And we found a ton of students that aren't necessarily very good at oral learning. They love having transcripts there, and they actually prefer that kind of class. We have a number of hearing impaired and deaf students that have suddenly joined seminary because they couldn't do it before, and now they can with that. So there's a lot of really fun side benefits when you start looking at what technology offers people new and different ways to learn. That's really exciting.
Okay, we've talked a lot about the learning aspect in terms of delivering content so that people get it and process it and learn it. How about what have you found as good practices in terms of facilitating classroom interaction? What tool seems to work well for this kind of content?
I mean, one of the fun things is this concept of the flipped classroom, right? Where you have you've recorded some really solid lectures that you want the students to get, but instead of doing that, instead of using your classroom time to lecture, you're actually able to give them some kind of lecture and say, okay, I want you to go read this book, Traditional Learning. I want you to listen to this short lecture, again, traditional learning, but then when you come into the classroom, you're actually able to process it and figure out how to make those deeper connections that you sometimes go, you get to the end of a class and you've been lecturing the whole class and you go, oh, sorry, we didn't have time to actually really make it solid. And now you have that classroom open to do that again. So on the physical classroom, we're able to see that. Some professors have experimented with those, systems like Jarvico or something like that, where you would, you know, text message in an answer and you're able to get real-time stats. And those can be fun in certain cases. I mean, I don't know that you can use them all the way across the board, but sometimes it's nice to see that you realize that in a classroom of 60 people, there's going to always be some kind of groupthink. And there's always going to be, you know, dominant speakers and people who maybe are more extroverted, and that creates it. So I think what some of the digital media allows you to take advantage of different personality types and different learning styles, and to kind of break those up and to serve all those different constituents in your classroom a little bit better than just the traditional lecture style, which only serves one kind of learner.
Well, that's a good thought. As technology proliferates, it's one of the attributes of digital technology is customization and personalization.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So there's different tools can meet people where they're at and help them.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that's always going to mean that you have to have, everyone has to have a little bit of humility in the classroom, because if you're one of those guys that loves an hour long lecture and you're not getting that anymore, maybe you're going to be a little bit frustrated. But if you're one of those people that loves group dynamics, you're still going to have to listen to some lectures, you know? And I think that that's a great thing for the body of Christ to be able to say, you know, we all have these different abilities, and God's made us all the different parts. And so we're all going to learn different ways. And I think that for the seminarian is good for them when they go out, because they're going to recognize this classroom is kind of a microcosm of what it's going to be like when I go to a church. There's going to be all different kinds of people. So the more the professors can kind of break that up, they're doing that other kind of learning that isn't just about getting a bunch of data. It's about actually spiritually forming people to love well.
Now, before we go to the local church, your seminary that's preparing local church leaders, how are you guiding them as an institution about the use of technology in the local church?
Yeah, I think what we've done is there's a course, kind of an introductory course to what we call Christian education for a while, or educational ministry. And that one now, I kind of do like a section on technology for that every time. And so all of them are getting at least introduced to, you know, media ecology and philosophy of technology, some of those, you know, kind of academic ideas. And then we look at some practical areas where those come up. And then, you know, this past year we did some chapel dialogues about that. So we're trying to really incorporate that, both from, you know, talking about it directly, but then also on the side of things where we talk about assignments and helping students say, you know, what you're going to be probably facing is someone asking you on Facebook a question, or being kind of maybe even being a little bit belligerent and talking about how to handle those things from like a counseling perspective. So hopefully working it more and more into both the direct curriculum and then also the extracurricular activities.
Great. And you're rather involved in your local church, so describe your involvement there, and how is your church using social media as part of the flow of ministry?
Yeah, so I'm at Irving Bible Church, which is kind of it's about 2,500 members. So in Dallas, that's not a mega church, that's kind of like a meh church, right? Because there's so many bigger ones, but it's a traditional mega church, so it's big. And we have a young adults group that's maybe 50, 100 people, something like that. And so I work with them and taught on Philippians 2 last night. And, you know, that's, again, this area of how to treat one another humbly in the example of Christ. We've done some technology ones with them as well. And then from the church's perspective, Scott McClellan is the communications director there, who used to be with the Echo Conference. And he's just done some great work, I think, in thinking through which platform is best for communication. So, you know, if you want to get a message out to people, I think in the past, sometimes you think like, oh, well, everybody's on Facebook, let's use Facebook. But Scott would have that secondary question of saying, well, do you want to get interaction on this? And if not, you shouldn't use Facebook, because that might be the place where if you don't want interaction there, maybe you should use email instead. So I think he's doing a good job of thinking through which medium is going to best both communicate and also get the feedback that we want. So he's just doing a great job there.
Yeah, when I saw the news of Scott joining the staff there, that was really exciting for me.
Yeah, he's just a good guy.
Because there's something about doing ministry in the local church that's different than working for parachurch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
great. Well, as we wrap up, where do you see all this headed? Social media keeps moving so fast.
Yeah, well, you know, if it was, 2007 was the iPhone, right? So 6 or 7 years ago, and now just about everybody has one of these things. And I think, you know, in just that short time, we went from nobody having them to everybody having them. And I think, I don't want to be overly predictive, but I think that there's something to the Google Glass stuff. I think that will be there. And as weird as it seemed when people had phones 7 or 8 years ago, now it's just a total normal part of life. Everybody's bumping into phone poles while they play, they look at their glowing screen, right? And I really do think that some type of wearable computing will become something. And I think there's some obvious, real cool benefits there that, you know, you can take photographs without having to pull up the phone and do this stuff. I think that will be really, really cool. I think, you know, the possibility of being able to, I think it'd be fun to kind of write a Bible app where if you looked around, it would be able to kind of see the world through scripture. I think that could be really, really cool. Or even, you know, being locationally aware of what you're doing and where you are. I think you could almost think of a device having like a moral aspect to it. So for example, imagine if my phone could be recording me all day, and it could tell if my voice was getting kind of high pitched and angry. It would say, you know, maybe you shouldn't send that email right now because you're a little bit frustrated. Maybe it could make advice for me that way. Or if I drove to certain areas of town, it could say, you know, this is a seedy area. You know, are you really going here for a good reason? It would be interesting to see if there was ways. Right now, about the only moral thing that you get on your phone is when YouVersion tells you you haven't read your Bible in 5 days, right? It tells you that. But it would be interesting to see if there was more more Christian morality that could be put in there. And that would be strange, as we've all offloaded our data and our minds to Google. What if we offload our sort of sanctification to our phone? That would be an interesting problem. And of course, there's all kinds of negative things that you could imagine with Google Glass as well. But I think that ability to remind you more personally, more customized, and to have it become a deeper and closer part of you. So if we think of media as moving from, like, you know, the theater to the television to the phone and to our eyes, it's coming closer and closer to our heart, which makes it wonderful and yet also, you know, scary as well. And so I think just coming at all that stuff with our eyes wide open will be important.
Wow, what an amazing thought to close on. Thank you, John Dyer, for joining me here on the Social Media Church podcast. Really great to connect with an alum. I myself am also a Dallas Theological Seminary graduate back in 1995, pre-internet days. And how amazing the technology has grown. Like John mentioned, 2007 was when the iPhone was made mainstream, and now smartphones on the Android side, as well as the iOS side of things, and the tablet computing is becoming quite a part of our everyday life. Who knows what's next? So part of it, I think, is to keep our minds open and discerning about these new technologies that will continue to accelerate and become parts of our lives. We'd love to hear from you here at the Social Media Church. Oh, and be sure to check the show notes for links to some of the things that were mentioned, and go back to the previous episode, episode number 44, for John Dyer's presentation about 9 ways that technology will impact your ministry. The show notes and the previous episodes are all located on the web at socialmediachurch.net. And I'd love to hear from you. What thoughts have these 2 episodes provoked in you as you think about the implications and the use of technology and social media in your ministry? We'd love to hear what is your church doing to use and incorporate social media into the life of your church. You can call in with your comments on the voicemail line. The number is 9493-543216. And you can shoot me an email at me@socialmediachurch.net, or use Twitter, Facebook, add a comment to this episode, whatever your preferred channel might be. I hope to meet you there. My name is DJ Chuang, and this wraps up this episode of the Social Media Church. Until next time, we'll stay connected online.